Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, spanning both coasts tonight. Sean Wally here in Long Island, New York. Sean Boyd in the 916, as usual.
What's going on, Mr. Wally? And man, we can actually both hang our heads high this weekend as we talk NFL football. Who? But you're over there in Long Island on the East Coast. And what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, just some Globetrotter work for a good week and a half, and things are going well, and got a game next Saturday at Stony Brook College here on Long Island, so it should be a good time.
So, yes, of course, for our listeners who don't know, the Washington Generals are no more, and the new name of your team is?
The World All-Stars.
Did you say the World All-Stars?
That is correct.
Oh, man, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to. You're talking about, my goodness, 6-7 generations that are used to the Washington Generals. Man. And so what do the uniforms look like? Are they going to be green and gold again?
I would highly doubt it. I have not seen them yet, but this weekend I will, so it'll be fun.
So yeah, so the same crew that will be coming back, just changing the name of the visiting team, of course, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of fun for all ages as the Harlem Globetrotters do not disappoint with entertainment.
Oh, not at all. Lots of fun planned, lots of competition, a lot of great players on the World All-Star team, so look for an exciting Globetrotter game near you starting December 26th.
Oh, man, that sounds like a lot of fun. Well, man, let's get right into it, man. Of course, the NFL each week brings us something different. Of course, the first 2 weeks for the Seattle Seahawks brought a little bit of doom and gloom. But, man, what a difference a week makes, because one guy brings back the old Legion of Boom, and I'm talking about Cam Chancellor coming back to Seattle, man. And of course, you're back east, but I know that there's probably some exciting Seahawks fans at one of the local watering holes there to watch it with you.
Absolutely. We've got a handful of guys from Seattle that are on some of the squads and staff members as well. Of course, we know Jared Lewis, the great announcer that's with us. He is from the Northwest, and so we had a good time finding a place to watch the Seahawks game. And man, who would have thought Cam Chancellor's impact hold the opponent scoreless? Granted, he didn't do it all, but he had to have a lot of impact into that scoreless output.
Well, yeah, I know that we will definitely talk a little bit more about the Seattle Seahawks in that game against the Chicago Bears, which it was it was a little bit humdrum. Seattle Seahawks took care of business. And of course, we will talk about the Oakland Raiders, my Oakland Raiders, as well later in the show. But let's go out to the Chandler Reach Winery phone lines, and we will bring in guest number one, and that is none other than Aaron Garcia. And Aaron, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem. Thank you.
Hey, Aaron, man, let's get right into it, man. Of course, you are, you know, when I look at your career as a pro football player, I mean, it is nothing short of brilliant, man. And I mean, of course, you played 18 years in the Arena Football League, but you've done some awesome things, man. And so, you know, starting out at, you know, as a Grant High School, a Grant Pacer from Sacramento here in the 916, going up to Wazoo, and then finishing at Sac State, man, you've led a pretty busy career.
Yeah, I've been all over the map. It's been fun. Played a lot longer than I thought I would, you know, starting out. But there was probably a little bit of a chip on my shoulder that contributed to that. But it was definitely a good run. And I started coaching this year. And to be honest with you, it was real hard not to go out there and try and throw it around once in a while. But it was a good transition.
And you mentioned being a head coach. Of course, you're the head coach of the Las Vegas Outlaws. You were named the head coach last year. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're mentioning, not wanting to have that fervor to throw the ball. I mean, you played 18 years, man. I mean, that's tremendous. And I can go all the way back. I wish I would have watched you play at Grant High School here in Sacramento. But I do remember watching you play at Washington State, man. And you did some cool things there. Of course, one of the games, I believe you beat the University of Washington Huskies in the Apple Cup. I believe it was 1993. Am I correct?
That wasn't me. I was actually gone at that point. I had transferred out of there. I had some big games in 90. I think I don't know. It was 91. But I never actually had the opportunity to play against Washington. I was always either behind somebody at the time. Drew Bledsoe, I think, was there in 93 when they beat Washington. I didn't get that opportunity. I think some of my biggest games, I beat Oregon. I beat Stanford in my freshman year. But then I had my coach, Dennis Erickson, had left. Mike Price came in, and we never had a real good relationship, so I ended up having to transfer back to Sacramento State.
Aaron, what do you remember? What are your fondest memories of playing for Washington State?
I think just being out there as a freshman, being young, we had a chance. We were playing USC on national television. I was named player of the game, and it's funny, a lot of time they give those awards out before the game is over, and USC came back and beat us with like 6 seconds left with Todd Marinovich at quarterback, and so that was kind of bittersweet. And I think just playing in Pullman, it was a great college atmosphere. The fans were great. I made a lot of good friends there. But just at the time, the Pac-10, but just Pac-12 sports, I mean, it was just competitive week in and week out. And, we were actually trying to build something at Washington State. And at that time, we were getting to be pretty good. And it was fun.
Aaron, as a guy that played quarterback for the Cougars, and you were there, as you said, early 90s, taking a look at what they have now with the upgraded facilities and additions to the stadium, what do you think it'll take to get a competitive team back in Pullman?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think they've taken the right steps. I think, that fast-paced offense, I think you're going to have to be able to bring in a different type of athlete because, you're always going to struggle, to get, those top recruits that maybe, the SCs, the UCLAs, the Washingtons, are getting. It's kind of ironic because I'm actually in the process of taking my daughter around. She's being recruited just to play basketball. And we just came back from USC, and then we're going to the University of Washington in 2 weeks. And then she's going to make a decision where she's going to go to college. So it's kind of ironic for me to be, trying to help her make a decision. But at the same time, I see, the value in some of those programs. And so I think Washington State still, is going to struggle, to get some of those top recruits. But I think when we were becoming good, when I was there, we had Dennis Erickson, who kind of was a little bit of a, I would say kind of a renegade. He did some different things. And I think Coach Leach has a lot of those same attributes, and I think it can work really well in Pullman, if things go right.
Aaron Garcia joining us here on the double. Now, Aaron, you mentioned your daughter being recruited for basketball, and you're helping her out in the process. Does she see the benefit of having a father that has gone through this process?
I think so. And if she doesn't, I try and let her know on a regular basis. But I look back and, you know, my parents kind of just let me make the decision myself, and which I appreciate. But at the same time, I don't think I was able to look at the big picture. You know, looking back, you know, I turned down Stanford and a couple other, you know, schools where maybe now, you know, I appreciate the importance of, you know, a strong degree and what you can do with that in the future. So, you know, she's 17 and she's going to listen to me, you know, as much as a 17-year-old does. But, you know, I'm definitely trying to, and her mom as well, you know, her mom played college basketball, played overseas a little bit. And so we're both trying to kind of show her the importance, not just of, you know, going to the best program athletically, but looking at the academic side of things and, you know, what that's going to mean to her future.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because if you don't prepare for those things, it could be a peril real quick. You can wind up, you know, for one, dropping out of school. So having her stay focused and having you and your wife guiding her through that process should definitely help her out in her education.
Yeah, I hope so. And she's got a good head on her shoulders. She's had a great high school career, and so I'm really trying to get her to enjoy the process. It's a tough process for a 17-year-old. You know, you got coaches kind of pressuring you, or you got coaches telling you how great you are, and to try and juggle all that and stay humble, but still be confident enough to make the right decision, you know, can be tricky. So we're trying to help her as much as we can.
Now, Aaron, of course, we were talking about your arena football days. 18 years is quite some time. And through that time, you have become one of the 25 greatest players. As a matter of fact, if I'm correct, I believe you are number three as far as the 25 greatest players in American football. How do you feel about that?
It's a great honor. I mean, because I've been around for so long, I've seen so many great athletes, you know, come through our league. And even before that, you know, watching and disrespecting the game, you know, in general, to be even associated with the best players of that league is a great honor. And you know, again, I feel very appreciative to the people that make those decisions and just all the people along the way that contributed to me being able to play as long as I did and have the success that I had.
Aaron Garcia joining us here on the double. Aaron, what do you remember about your process of getting into the Arena Football League?
I remember not wanting to go. I remember, you know, you got your heart set on getting into the NFL, and I actually spent an entire year turning down offers to the Arena Football League, the Canadian League, and you know, just, I guess, you know, setting my mind on trying to make an NFL roster. And with transferring out of Washington State, and then I was injured my senior year at Sacramento State, you know, I didn't get that chance. And so finally, after working out for a year, I just figured I better get on the field somewhere. And it's probably one of the best things I ever did. I had some of the politics involved in college football had kind of taken away the love that I had for the game, and getting into arena football and going out there and just having a good time and throwing the ball all over the field kind of brought that back. And I ended up getting an opportunity with the 49ers at one point, and you know, not the one I actually, you know, that I would have hoped for, but it was still an opportunity. So again, I consider myself blessed, and it was, you know, it was a lot of fun, and I wouldn't change anything.
Aaron, how hard was the adjustment to go from normal, regular football, 100-yard field to the indoor game of the AFL?
I think the hardest thing is I remember my first game. I walked out there, and I throw a touchdown, and I come off the field, you know, kind of pat myself on the back, thinking about how good I am, and 2 seconds later, the guy runs a kickoff back, you know, and then go back out, throw another touchdown, and then they go down and score, and it was just all of a sudden you start getting towards the end of the game, and it goes from being fairly easy to score to being a lot of pressure. Like, you know, you can't play for field position like you can in 11-man football, you know, where, you know, punting and is sometimes the best option. You know, you have to score every time you touch the ball. And so that part was tough. And then I took a lot of hits early in my career. And that, you know, that was, I think, another, you know, big transition, especially playing on the turf that we played on at that time. You know, I mean, there was times when they would roll AstroTurf right on top of an ice rink, you know, because the New York Islanders had played the night before and we had a game the next day. So there were, I mean, there were a lot of things, but again, to be able to go out there and not really have to hand the ball off, I mean, that's what I did at Grant. That's kind of what I did at Washington State. And so that was, I mean, just that in and of itself was great for me as a quarterback.
Aaron Garcia joining us here on the double now. Aaron, of course, you had mentioned with the short field, and, you know, you put up quite a few yards. I believe in 2011, you broke the AFL record throwing for 50,000 yards. And just to give you an idea of 50,000 yards, that's 28 miles, man. 28 miles, and you're with the Jacksonville Sharks. I mean, that's a lot of throwing, especially for arena football.
Yeah, it is. I mean, on a half field like that, and you know, you try and kind of either double the numbers to make some kind of NFL comparison, or you know, cut them in half, you know, whatever you do. But I mean, it's however you look at it, it's a lot of throwing. And again, I think you know the biggest thing is you can't make a lot of mistakes, you know, in those situations. And so it made you focus a little bit more as a quarterback. And but yeah, it's a lot of yards. There was a lot of ice on my shoulder and elbow, and also a lot of, you know, work in the off season to be able to stay healthy and make it through a season.
Now, Aaron, let's talk about the transition. Of course, you being a player for quite some time and now a head coach. And of course, as a quarterback, you are the coach on the field, but what's the difference, you know, from stepping off the field and becoming the head coach of a team?
It's kind of crazy. I was lucky because a lot of the coaches that I had my last, you know, 5 or 6 years allowed me to call my own offense, you know, kind of almost like, I guess, what you saw Peyton Manning doing for a while. And so I had a little bit of a taste for being a, you know, I guess the leadership role that comes with being a quarterback as well as a coach. But going over to that other side was definitely a different, I guess, feel. And it was a weird transition. I felt real comfortable with it. Probably the biggest problem I had is I just wasn't very patient with the quarterback. I think I was pretty good with everybody else, but it was real hard for me. And we went through four of them. We had injuries and, you know, we had guys that, you know, just didn't perform. And I think, you know, if I'm able to do this again next year or, you know, down the road, you know, for any length of time, I need to figure out how to be more patient and teach a little bit better than I did last year.
Aaron, who were people in your life that were influential to help you get to the heights that you've been able to get to in football?
I mean, I start with my dad, first and foremost. He actually played the position, played at Grant High School, got recruited in college, ended up going to the University of New Mexico to play baseball. But he was my quarterback, or he was one of my coaches at Grant as well. So, I mean, I think that was the biggest role model and influence in my life. But, I mean, a lot of other people, my high school football coach, Bob Bukalovich, and, you know, just I can go down the line. I've had a lot of great coaches, and also I think just friends that I made, linemen and receivers that, I mean, worked their butt off for me. I had, I guess, my best friend was a lineman that would go out anytime I needed him to for 18 years. His name is Corey Brandon. He was just my best man in my wedding, but he would run routes for me. Even though he was a lineman, if I couldn't find somebody to throw to, he would go out and run routes for me whenever I needed it, you know, over 18 years. And so, I mean, just all of those things, you know, have contributed and I'm really thankful for throughout my career.
Aaron, what advice would you have for maybe a small college football player or even a Division I that maybe has a story like yourself, not exactly getting looked at from the NFL? And, you know, should they turn to the AFL, what would you tell them?
Well, we can take, you know, we had a young quarterback this year out of Columbia University, the Ivy League, and his name was Sean Brackett. And I watched him on, you know, YouTube, watched his highlights. I mean, tremendous athlete. I think he's going to, if he sticks with it, he's going to get a chance in the NFL. And I just, you know, talked to him about coming into the Arena Football League, not necessarily with the idea of getting to the next level, but being the best arena football quarterback he can be and then letting everything else kind of take care of itself. And you know, there's a lot of stories like that. You'd be amazed how many people I've seen come in from the University of Notre Dame or USC and get beat out by a guy from Wayne State University or, you know, another small college or something like that. And it's just because arena football is really a one-on-one game. You can't hide. You can't – yeah, there's some strategy, but, you know, it's almost like pickup basketball. You're going to find a weakness and exploit it. And so, you know, guys come in and you know, hungry to get to the next level, and it's just it's fun to watch. You know, Kurt Warner type story. I mean, those are still out there, and maybe they're few and far between. But there's a lot of other guys that have gotten into the NFL and, you know, had good 3 or 4 year careers, you know, and done well for themselves. So I think it's just about following your dreams, whatever you do.
Great words of wisdom from Aaron Garcia, record-holding quarterback in the Arena Football League. Aaron, thank you so much for your time and insight tonight.
Thank you, guys, very much.
Dipping into the 916, Sacramento's Aaron Garcia sharing with us his passion for playing football and the ups and downs of life at college and also in the AFL.
Yeah, you know, and having Aaron on, you know, he's pretty modest as far as what he has done. And, you know, which reason why I talked about the 18 years of playing professional football, that is an amazing feat, no matter what level of profession it is. And he's done an awesome job. And man, 60,000 yards, 34 miles of passing is incredible, man. So definitely have to tip our caps to him there. And of course, being the number 3 all-time AFL player. Man, we had a good one on here, man. And I could talk with Aaron. Of course, we could talk to Aaron all night long. But, of course, the way it goes on the double, things must go on, man. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to have guest number 2 here on the double. That is none other than Cottrell Macklin. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit PowerAlleyPerformance.com.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. John, a great day in the NFL yesterday if you are a Seattle Seahawks fan.
You know, boy, I'll say, you know, and, you know, the Seahawks were reeling a little bit, as I had mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the show, and it was no surprise in the Pacific Northwest. Starting out at 0-2, that's not the way that you want to start the season. But then, of course, you know, when it looked like all was lost and it looked like Cam Chancellor was going to pack it in and, you know, sit out for the remainder of the season, something happened. And, of course, the big news broke out from Stephen A. Smith on First Take on ESPN, as apparently he had some conversation with he and Ray Lewis, former Baltimore Ravens, and they talked some sense. Actually, Ray Lewis talked some sense into Cam Chancellor. And then Cam comes back, and the Seattle Seahawks are now, man, let's say it, they're back to who they were, or are they, Sean Wally?
Well, first of all, Sean Boyd, if you're going to give credit to somebody for breaking the Cam Chancellor story, let's give it to the man it's due to, and that is none other than former On the Double guest, good buddy of ours, G. Scott, who was a personal friend of Cam Chancellor's, 6:30 in the morning that day, Seattle time. He texts G. Scott and said, it's time to go to work.
Well, you know, I'm just going off of what I saw, man. And Stephen A. Smith said that he was the first to get it, and he got the text from Cam Chancellor, and that's how they broke it on First Take. So, man, I mean, you know how the media is. They can say it the way they want. So we'll take it. We'll give it to G. Scott. But maybe we'll have to check with Stephen A. because he's saying that he was the one that got it first. And then, of course, there's a report from Michael Silver from Yahoo or from the NFL Network that, you know, he broke it as well. So either way, Cam Chancellor is back in Seattle. And I can tell you, you know, from watching the game that his just his energy level and him being there, you know, rose the 12s up probably a couple of decibels. And that made it an enjoyable game in the beginning.
And there are people that were wondering whether or not Cam would be received very well, whether there would be some boos at CenturyLink. But the majority of the crowd, from the people I've talked to and heard from that worked the game for CBS Sports, said, no, it was nothing but cheers for Cam Chancellor coming back.
You know, and wouldn't you think that would be the case? I mean, of course, last week, you know, people wanted to hang Cam in effigy, and that's the way fanatics are. You know, and there's a lot of hatred and bitterness, and then all of a sudden he decides to play. And what we didn't know that Cam held out. Oh, he's our savior now. And so of course Cam comes in, and even though he was there physically, he wasn't really there as Cam Bam because he only had one tackle, but he didn't need to tackle a lot. I mean, Seattle Seahawks took care of business, beating the Chicago Bears 26-0. Sean Wally, I mean, it was pretty much a laugh or a sleeper from the jump.
Hey, it was a Jimmy Graham sighting finally in Seattle.
Yeah, you know, and that was big. I mean, the Jimmy Graham sighting, you know, there's a lot of turmoil that's going on. A little, you know, so many plates that Pete Carroll has to turn. And I know that the Seahawk faithful are saying, hey, this is something that is normal, which it's not. This is not normal for any team. It's not normal for a Seattle Seahawks team. And to have these many little nicks and problems and things that are going on, that could be something that we need to watch, you know, as far as Seattle cranking it up and getting things going. But Jimmy Graham, 7 catches for 83 yards and a touchdown. So they pacified the need for Jimmy Graham. And, you know, I guess things will be rolling again in Seattle.
That's right, Sean. It was important for them to get Jimmy Graham rolling, and he was a little frustrated after week 2, and of course the 0-2 record did not help. But how about the new rookie, the Rocket, Tyler Lockett? And let's give a shout out. Happy birthday to Tyler Lockett. It's his 23rd today. Man, another punt return for a touchdown.
Yeah, you know, if you didn't watch the game and you just opened up took a look at the score and you said 26-0, it was like, man, you know, the Seahawks just ran all over the Bears and there was offense aplenty. But, you know, as you'd mentioned, Tyler Lockett with the kickoff return, that was one of the biggest highlights outside of the Jimmy Graham touchdown. Those were the only 2 touchdowns on offense. The rest of the points, actually, we have to tip our cap off to who I call the player of the game, and that's Steve Hoschka with 4 field goals and 2 extra points. He accredited for 14 of the 26 points, John Wally. So as much as we can see that the Seattle Seahawks dominated, there's still a little bit of work to do.
Well, the offense wasn't firing on all cylinders, even in the first half of that game. So they still have to figure out how to start faster in Seattle, the Seahawks. I don't know if it just takes them a while to get in rhythm or if they're just so focused on finishing in that fourth quarter, but they definitely have to get that ironed out. But Sean, did you see, since you were able to watch the game on almost a national broadcast on CBS with A crew, Jim Nance, Phil Sims on the call, that the great punt return, they took a page out of the St. Louis Rams book and had Tyler Lockett the decoy, and Richard Sherman caught the punt and went running up the sideline, almost took it to the house. I don't know how he got caught.
Yeah, well, you know, even though Sherman has some speed, he has nice lanky legs that are easy to clip up. And so, you know, and he's a strong defensive back, but he's still not too heavy. So, you know, all it takes is a little bit of a push. He fell down. He got a little taste of his own medicine being tackled, but that was an excellent decoy. I thought, man, you know, the ball's going to Lockett, and the next thing you know, when the shadow came down, you see Richard Sherman locking in, and as soon as he took off, you see the whole punt return team just sprint like a flock of birds to the right side of the field as Sherman is sprinting down the left side. And man, that was one of the highlights of the game.
And of course, at running back, Marshawn Lynch, no beast mode in this game. He has a hamstring issue. He said he heard it pop on that 4th-and-1 pass play where he bobbled the ball, caught it, converted the first down. They're having an MRI on his hamstring. And definitely, if you have him in your fantasy league, you are not happy heading into week 4.
Yeah, well, you might not be happy with Marshawn Lynch because I think it was a surprise to everybody. As I texted you, I was like, man, what's going on with Marshawn Lynch? They said that he needed extra time to stretch, and we thought it was a calf, and you know, it was kind of nonchalantly coming out, and I was wondering what the deal was, but it's no big deal. I mean, when you have somebody like Thomas Rawls with 16 carries and 104 yards, you almost don't miss a beat. And Sean, we talked about Fred Jackson a couple of weeks ago, but you mentioned Thomas Rawls, and when Thomas Rawls is on the field, I mean, number 34 looks a lot like 24. He's putting his shoulder and his head down, and he's, you know, pushing people up the field. And, you know, I think he did an awesome job for a rookie.
What I like about Rawls is he's quicker than beast mode. At least it appears that way. And yeah, for him to come in as a rookie and get a chance, which doesn't normally happen when you're behind Marshawn Lynch on the depth chart. And here he is getting carries. Occasionally Fred Jackson's in there on third down doing good things. So I like the rotation and the fact that they're giving each guy a shot.
Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a win was this for the Seattle Seahawks against a beleaguered Chicago Bears team?
It was an 11. It didn't matter who the opponent was. They just needed the victory. They just needed something positive, something to start the ball rolling down the defending NFC championship train. And, you know, they've got a schedule that's not too terribly tough the next few weeks, considering they started with 2 tough road games.
Yeah, and so things lighten up a little bit, and that will give the Seahawks a chance to get things rolling. It'll give Cam Chancellor a chance to get acclimated with his teammates. It'll give Marshawn Lynch a chance to, you know, heal his injuries. And, of course, all of the nicks and dings that the Seattle Seahawks have had this year, which is something that is a little different over the past couple of years. And, you know, I believe that Seattle will be able to fix those things later in the season. But one thing I do want to talk to you about as far as the Seahawks are concerned, Sean Wally, is here we go again. We're in this almost the same position as we were last year.
I knew this was coming.
And, you know, I mean, the Arizona Cardinals, you know, and I love the Seahawk faithful. Don't get me wrong, because I get a kick out of the amnesia that Seahawks fans have. But last year, the Arizona Cardinals were 9-1 before Carson Palmer went down. And I believe if Carson Palmer stays healthy, then we don't even see what we saw at the end of the season between New England and Seattle. That's a whole nother subject. But this year, the same thing applies as far as the Arizona Cardinals are concerned. They, right now, appear to be the best team in football. Now, I know the Seattle believes that they are, regardless of the injuries and you know, the recent history that they have. But what about the Arizona Cardinals and what they're doing, Sean Wally, this early on?
Well, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned early on in the show with the Seahawks. It's great to be playing well. Every team would like to be 3-0. Obviously, that doesn't happen. The Cardinals are playing like gangbusters right now. Carson Palmer is playing out of his mind. But as you know from having Palmer in Oakland, and it happened in Cincinnati, obviously it happened last year in Arizona, he has issues staying healthy. So we have to wait and see if he can last all 16 games. If he does, yes, they're going to be a formidable foe in the NFC West, most definitely. But the division is not won in September. We got to see if Arizona can be doing this well in November, in December, and roll that into January. I said to Jared Lewis, one of our former guests here on the Double, watching the Seahawks game as well as having the Cardinal game on, when they're shellacking the 49ers, and Kaepernick throwing every pass to the Cardinals. That was hilarious. But I said, you know what? That very well could be the NFC Championship game, Arizona-Seattle, depending on where everybody else fits in record-wise in the NFC, or at least a playoff matchup between those two teams. But we got a long way to go. And yeah, Arizona, they've been a good team for years. They just haven't been able to get over that hump of the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, Seattle's not going to back down to anybody. So it should be a wild, wild NFC West.
One of the things I have to give tip to Seattle is the fact that they are a complete football team, offense, defense, special teams, the whole nine. I mean, if one person goes down, another can pop into place, as we were talking about with Thomas Rawls. And, you know, so that I definitely give that the plus to. You know, when it comes to head-to-head coaching, you know, Pete Carroll, there's probably none better than Pete Carroll, and it's showed over the past few years. But a close second would be Bruce Arians and how he develops his teams. And the way Bruce Arians is he's the type of person that wants to keep the hammer down. And that showed yesterday, 47-7, that's like, you know, college football. You know, when you're trying to impress people with a ranking, you just keep letting, you know, making an example and saying, man, we're on our way to 100 and you got to stop us. And at some point, you know, you take the throttle off. But Arizona, just as you had mentioned, throttled San Francisco yesterday. I don't know what was going on with Colin Kaepernick. You know, the first, I believe, 4 minutes of the game, he threw two pick sixes. And after that, it was just, man, it was amazing. It was amazing how much Arizona just kept bringing it. And as they brought it, San Francisco, you know, threw up the white flag and kept retreating.
Hey, Sean, before we move on to the autumn wind, one final thing to mention in the Seahawks game, that Tyler Lockett punt return for the touchdown we talked about. Did you notice that CBS on the replay added a miles per hour to how fast Lockett was running?
You know, I heard about it. I didn't quite see it, but how fast was he clocked?
A peak of 21 miles an hour. It was ridiculous how fast that guy can run.
Yeah, he was moving, and hats off to the special teams on the. There was a huge wall on both sides that he just ran through, and once he got past the kicker, it was just, man, he was moving 21 miles an hour, as intense, and he looked every bit of it because I believe he was untouched.
Exactly, untouched. Tyler Lockett, the Rocket. One more time, happy birthday to Tyler Lockett. Sean Boyd, your favorite football team, the Oakland Raiders, are above 500 after 3 weeks. They're 2-1 after taking out the Cleveland Browns on the road.
You know, that boy, that Cleveland Browns game was an excellent game to watch if you're, you know, part of the Raider Nation. And, you know, I'm impressed with this team week in and week out. You know, one of the things that I was impressed about was the way that Amari Cooper played, and, you know, the way Derek Carr played, and Latavius Murray. I mean, when you have that trio, that young of a trio that did what they did, I believe they had the most yards by a receiver, running back, and a quarterback combined for players under age 25. So think about that. That's a lot to swallow. But for three players under the age of 25, they hold the record for the most yards at 587 yards. And, you know, they had an awesome game. You had, of course, Derek Carr starting out the game and doing what he does best as far as, you know, making his completions. And he and Amari Cooper hooked up right out the gate. Amari had over 100 yards at the beginning of the second quarter. That's amazing, Sean. When you're talking about this type of a team, this young of a team, and they're actually starting to turn the corner.
Well, they've had two good weeks in a row in Oakland, and, you know, hopefully they can continue to build, continue to improve, and not take a couple steps forward and then a couple steps back.
You know, one of the things that we don't give credit to is the offensive line and how they played over, you know, this first three games of the season. Derek Carr has pretty much been untouched. I mean, I believe he's been sacked twice over the first three games. He wasn't sacked yesterday. And Cleveland dialed up the blitz. I believe it was Scott Baird, the Raiders insider for Comcast Sportsnet, said that the Cleveland Browns had blitzed 18 plays. And out of that 18 plays, get this, Derek Carr was 13-18 for 276 yards, two TDs and zero picks with a passer rating of 151. Think about that. I mean, we have to tip our caps off to the Raiders offensive line as well. And of course they lost Menelik Watson, you know, one of their strong tackles in the beginning, but you know, they plug, another offensive lineman in place, and they are doing an awesome job opening up some great holes for Latavius Murray, 26 carries, 139 yards. So, excellent job by the offensive line.
Well, an excellent job all around, because they put a whooping on Cleveland in the dog pound, shut down what had been a good offense in Cleveland. And, you know, there's a former Super Bowl MVP in the middle of that linebacking crew, Malcolm Smith, doing great things in Oakland.
Yeah, you know, I can never get it past you from implementing some type of Seahawks talk in anything that we do. But yeah, Malcolm Smith, the Oakland Raider, doing an awesome job, and he's around.
I didn't mention anything about him being a former Seahawk. I just said former Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, well, who is he a Super Bowl MVP of? There we go.
If you ask the question, I'll give you the answer. Are you asking the question?
So, former Super Bowl MVP and former Seattle Seahawk Malcolm Smith doing an awesome job with the Oakland Raiders, along with, man, our newly energized defensive coordinator and Ken Norton Jr. Also from, where is he from, Sean Wally? Where did he coach last year?
Seattle.
Yes, that's right, the Seattle Seahawks. So there's a mass exodus. Yeah, man, you know, I thought that theme was going to bring down Cam Bam, but that's, hey, he's back in Seattle. So, you know, hats off there. But, yeah, Malcolm Smith.
Sean, if you're trying to take one of the best players in all the league, you have to get his nickname right. It's Bam Bam Cam.
Oh, okay. Bam Bam Cam, Cam Bam, whatever. He hits hard. Either way. But, you know, if it wasn't for Ray Lewis, I believe, who actually talked some sense into him, I believe that he was heading toward the autumn wind. But hey, he's back where he belongs, and we're happy for him up there in Seattle. So, but yeah, man, the Raiders did it.
Sean, you're gonna love this one, and you're gonna get a big kick out of it.
What's that?
My cohort here, a fellow coach of the World All Stars, is also an Oakland Raider fan and a member of the Raider Nation. One Reggie Harrison, loving the silver and black.
Well, tell Reggie, man, there's some more good things to come. And, you know, we can thank the Seattle Seahawks yesterday for putting that bludgeoning on the Chicago Bears, because if you didn't, and maybe if you did or didn't, Sean Wally, there was a fire sale going on today with the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears let go of Jared Allen to the Carolina Panthers, Sean Wally. What do you think of that for a sixth round pick?
Well, you know, Jared Allen used to be one of the best defensive ends in the game, and he did have a no-trade clause, but he thankfully was willing to waive it because he wanted to play for a team that has a shot, and Carolina is 3-0, so he's making the move to the Panthers. And, Sean, before we get to our next guest, who is waiting, also I want to let you know that Reggie Harrison will be with the Harlem Globetrotters in your neck of the woods in Sacramento in the middle of January. So I may have to hook you guys up and see if you guys can meet and get to the game and have a good time.
Most definitely, man. And of course, now you said, when will he be down here?
The middle of January.
Okay. Middle of January. Man, it's right around playoff time for the NFL. Okay. Yeah. So we might have to make that a date to try to get down to O.co. Boy, this is how good things are going here in Northern California for the Oakland Raiders. You know, if they can get this win against the Chicago Bears after the fire sale that we were talking about, John Bostic also being let go, the linebacker for the Chicago Bears, going to New England for another six-round pick. And, man, there's talks of David Bales probably getting in to play against the Raiders and in for Jimmy Clausen, but I think that's just talk from John Fox. But thanks, Seattle, for giving them that beating so that it can make things a little bit easier for the Raiders. And if we are 3-1 after this, we look to play the Denver Broncos, who would possibly be 4-0 And that would be a great game at O.co, a 4-0 Broncos team versus a 3-1, or the Broncos could be 3-1. Either way, it would be a game for supremacy in week number 5. And we'll look forward to that if we can get past the Chicago Bears, Sean Wally.
Well, let's head out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number 2 tonight from Memphis, Tennessee, Cottrell Macklin. Cottrell, what's going on?
Man, greetings, my friends. Live from Memphis, Tennessee, as you stated.
Hey, hey, welcome, Cottrell, man. So there's some good things happening down there in Tennessee and some bad things at the same time. And what I mean is you have an awesome, awesome quarterback in Marcus Mariota, one of the Pacific Northwest finest out of University of Oregon, doing some good. And then, of course, yesterday kind of came up a little short as they played the, man, I don't know who this Indianapolis Colts team is, but, you know, Tennessee did enough to actually win this game yesterday.
Yes, they did. And Indianapolis, as you mentioned, I don't know what team that is, but Marcus Mariota, since he came in, as you guys know, I guess I was out in Tennessee. I was in Nashville this summer and covering the Tennessee Titans, and they looked phenomenal. Well, obviously, that's practice. And there you can tell the difference. But you can tell in the eyes of Mariota that the kid's going to be good. You've seen it in the first matchup where he completed a large number of passes that he threw, and his percentage of completion rate is not bad at all. 62.9, which is not bad. Against the Colts, 27 of 44 passes for 367 yards and, you know, 2 touchdowns. But he did throw his first 2 interceptions of his young NFL career. It's not, I wouldn't say terrible asset on him, because I am really impressed with who he is and what he has become. But on the same note, he still has some, you know, some learning to do and the transitioning to do over to the pros of football. Because as we all know, University of Oregon is totally different football than, you know, the NFL.
Well, I mean, as you mentioned that, the University of Oregon is an entirely different football team without Marcus Mariota. And, man, I don't even want to get into that spanking that they got.
Oh, yeah, touch on it. Touch on it. I got friends out in Oregon, and they're not too happy about what's going on out there. But,
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just, that's how the cookie crumbles, you know, some of these years. You're great 1 year, the next year, you fall out of the top 25, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, when you're talking about kicking somebody when they're down, I mean, 62 to 20, my God, man. I mean, you know, Utah just kept putting it on them and putting it on them because, I mean, I guess they were doing it for the rest of the country. They got beat by the Oregon Ducks for so many years. And so, man, I mean, they must have got a phone call by all the coaches around the country saying, man, keep turning it up. Keep turning it up, because they did, man. It was amazing.
Yeah, they did not get off their necks, obviously. They put them down on the ground and they say, hey, Oregon, welcome to Utah football, and this is what we're going to do, and you're going to take it as well as like it. And that's what they did.
Good stuff.
Cottrell, 3 weeks into the NFL season, what has surprised you maybe in a good way and maybe teams that surprise you in not a good way?
2 things I'm surprised about. I guess they're more so players than it is NFL teams. I'm surprised with the Cardinals, for one, but not necessarily as a whole. It's more of a, you know, CJ2K. He came out, you know, got done with the Tennessee Titans, but the guy's putting in work out there. He's doing pretty darn good. CJ2K not playing bad. Now, that's one player. On the other end, as we just talked about, Marcus Mariota, and he's doing, I say, fairly well. I mean, some people are mad about the way that he's playing and saying he's not transitioning well over to the NFL game, but, you know, 63% of his passes are completed for, you know, 833 yards. So he got 8 touchdowns and obviously the 2 interceptions that he got the other day. But he's been strong, you know. He coming over from Oregon, I guess a lot of people expected, you know, the 2014-15 Heisman Trophy winner out of the University of Oregon. The guy's going to come in. He's going to be 10 times as better as Jameis Winston, or he's going to be worse than Jameis Winston. But a lot of people didn't jump on his bandwagon, but I did, and I'm still going to continue to do so because he hasn't played a terrible game. The Titans are 1-2. Yes, they lost their previous two games, but they got to take their first game of the year, and I guess they kind of felt good about that one. But they should get back together and regroup, and hopefully they hit the ground running soon.
Breaking news here on the double: the Kansas City Chiefs finally throw a touchdown to a wide receiver, first time in 18 games, more than an entire season, as Jeremy Maclin catches a touchdown in Green Bay.
It's about
fantastic
time.
Yeah. In your LeBron James voice.
Man, it's about time. Man, we were waiting on that to happen. Like I said, it's about time.
Yeah, just unbelievable that you don't throw touchdowns to wide receivers in more than a year. Unbelievable. But anyway, Cottrell, you're doing a lot of great things down there in Memphis. You're working behind the scenes for ESPN at college football games, doing a lot of the production work that Sean and I do as well. And you're also working for a TV station in Memphis. So give us an update on the life of Cottrell Maclin.
The life of Cottrell Maclin. Wow. How spectacular that is. No, it's not. It's been pretty busy lately, as you know. In the broadcasting realm, you have to fill your schedule up with different aspects. When I came back from Vegas for the NBA Summer League, hit the ground running with ESPN, and I've been doing it so for the following weeks and the last few weeks. I've been on the road, different places. Ole Miss the last couple of weeks. I did Memphis and Cincinnati on Thursday. Then I went to Oxford for Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, but that's a team that has surprised me, man. Ole Miss is playing some real football, collegiate football, and they're looking really, really nice. And I called it their first game. A lot of people, you know, didn't think they were going to be oh so good. I mean, yeah, they came out number 25 at first, went up to 17, and obviously now number 3 in the nation, knocking off Alabama, and it looked really good doing it. But they kind of kept the eyes open and say, hey, these guys are beatable, when they played Vandy the other day. So, like I said, in my life, I'm doing a couple things. TV stations here, working with Memphis Tiger Network, which is the official sports channel for the University of Memphis Athletics. Their football team is making noise as well. A lot of people not taking notice of it, but those guys are currently 4-0, and that's the first time since, listen to this, guys, 1963. I wasn't even thought of. My parents didn't even think of me around 1963. I don't even know if they were born. But anyway, on top of that, they have the longest streak right now for the most 40-point-plus games in a season. So, and then as well, to add on to that record, they are currently 11-game win streak for with this season, but 11 games going in from last season. So that's a major change. If you've been updated, pretty much no one has been on Memphis collegiate football, but this is a major thing. But I know one thing we can do, though, and that's knock off the University of Oregon, and there's no doubt about that.
Oh, shots fired.
The haymaker from Cottrell
Maclin. Oh, yeah, man. You throw up the alley, you catch it like LeBron, and you send it down.
Man, we should put you in charge of scheduling that game. Unfortunately, they do it 2 years in advance. But, man, that'd be a nice one to see Oregon play in Memphis.
Oh, yeah, it would. If you guys want to come with, you know, your little attitudes and so on and so forth, that would be that would kind of turn into the aspect. I don't know if you've seen this one, but the Miami Bowl, I believe it was the South Beach Bowl or the Miami Beach Bowl or something like to that effect, last season, which is the last game that the Tigers played in. They took on BYU, and boy, you call a brawl. Six of those guys were suspended. The other guys, you know, they graduated. But I think there was 300-plus community service hours for these guys. And it was just a mix of, you know, weightlifting and, you know, the coaches. The coaches called it personal development. We all know what that means.
Yeah.
You go in the weight room, and you strive, and he puts his foot on your neck, and you're going to do what he says the next 3 hours. So, like I said, I would love to see that matchup. University of Oregon versus Memphis. How about that one?
So that Donnybrook that happened during that bowl, that was a precursor of them turning the corner and becoming the tough Memphis Tigers that they are today.
Oh, yeah. Now, you guys want to put Memphis on that schedule and on that ranking as, man, Memphis is one of those bad cities in the world, in the nation right now. They're number one or two behind Detroit in crime. Well, okay, you want to put us up there, let's play ball. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going to put us under there on the ground and you're going to want to play some hard-nosed football, let's get down there. And when you do something dirty, we're going to do something even dirtier. And I'm not talking martini.
That's good stuff.
Well, Cottrell, two tidbits of info for you. I found this pretty awesome. As people may know out there, if you don't, I'll remind you, Cottrell and I have worked for the Global Basketball Summer League in Las Vegas the last 2 years in July. And Cottrell, one of the players at the Global Basketball Summer League is on my squad with the World All-Stars, and that is one Chris Hike.
What? Really?
Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a surprise, but it's not a surprise. And I mean that in the aspect, it being a surprise, because it's like, well, about time that somebody gave this guy an offer. And it's not a surprise because, like I said, it's about time. The kid's about business. He gets the job done. Obviously, he was there 2 years in a row at Global Basketball Summer League, but he made his name known while he was there. He even, like I said, he came back for a second year. He had offers on the table, didn't take a few because they weren't so good. But this kid can ball. I've seen some players. I've seen a lot of players in different locations. I know you have Sean, both Seans. You guys have seen a lot of ballers. But this guy, Chris Hike, is something serious.
Yeah, he's a real good player, and it's going to be fun to spend time with him and have him on my squad. And then on top of that, I want you to know, Mr. Macklin, Memphis, Tennessee, I will be there with the Harlem Globetrotters. I want to say February, if not, no, I think it's probably January, but I'll get the date to you for sure, and we'll definitely have to connect here in the coming months.
Yes, yes, Mama, we made it. We are here. We made it, Mama. You're coming to Memphis. We've been waiting on that, Sean, really. Congratulations on everything that's been going on for us, the Globetrotters, but I can't wait till you come to town. We're definitely going to link up and get a few things going. So when you get here, please let me know. I'm going to stay abreast of that, and we'll talk about that. But, man, it will be great to link up with you, and we get out, and I show you around the good city of Memphis, not the bad. You know, it's not too much of a bad city. Say what you want. Memphis is a good town, you know? It's good. Just don't go in certain areas.
Like that anywhere, Cottrell.
Yeah, any city, USA.
Yeah.
Cottrell Macklin, thanks for your time tonight. I know you're busy, got a lot to do early in the morning, so put your head on that pillow. Have a great night. Thanks for your insight tonight.
Always good having you on it. All right, take care, Cottrell.
Absolutely, you as well.
There goes Cottrell Macklin from Memphis. It's going to be great to get out there, I believe, middle to end of January and put on a show and have a great game with the Globetrotters and see if Cottrell and I can hang out for a few.
Man, I love having Cottrell on because, you know, his energy, you know, he can kick the show into, you know, kick it up a couple of notches, man. I love the fact that he loves his local sports and, you know, the Memphis Tigers doing some awesome things, but man, he brought up the brawl from last year. I don't know if you saw that, Sean, but I got a chance to see that. And, man, it was ugly. Everybody, you know, there were helmets pulled off and, you know, it was probably one of the more gruesome fights that you would see between two football teams. And, you know, I mean, maybe that was, you know, one of their rallying cries in the locker room and said, man, we will not be, you know, pushed around or beat again. But man, love having Cottrell on.
Yeah, he's always coming with good insight. As you said, great energy. He's a great guy. He's hilarious. We've spent a couple of weeks together in Vegas the last couple of years for Global Basketball, and he's doing great things. And who knows, maybe he'll be in front of the camera for ESPN real soon. So Sean, the Raiders 2-1, they have who coming up this weekend?
Well, they've got the Chicago Bears, who the Seattle Seahawks had smacked around yesterday, which was good. And before we had Cottrell on, I'd mentioned some of the the things that were going on transition-wise for the Chicago Bears. I mean, getting rid of starters, and it looks like they are definitely dialing it in. So this is one of the things that Jack Del Rio has to prepare his team for and not to fall into what we call the trap game and, you know, let these guys know that they're professionals. And even though things are changing in their organization, meaning the Chicago Bears organization, that is business as usual. This is only one game that they won, even though it was a big game on getting off the schneid. I don't know if we talked about this, but that was the Raiders' first road win since 2013. And it ended a 16-game Eastern time zone drought dating back to 2009, when none other than Tom Cable, who is the assistant head coach of your Seattle Seahawks, was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. So, man, they've gotten the monkey off of their back there and looking to go for two in a row on the road and possibly three in a row for the season, man. Gosh, Sean, I'm excited. I'm excited about what is happening in the Raider Nation.
Raider Nation will be on cloud nine if that can happen. I don't even want to ask when the last time they won three in a row was.
Man, I'm going to have to really dig in the archives. It has to go back to 2002, 2003, because I don't remember them, you know, since I've been here in Northern California. I don't remember actually seeing that. So, so yeah, man, it's been a while, definitely.
Well, up in the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle Seahawks have to wait until Monday for a date to welcome the return of one Maple Bar stealing thief, Golden Tate, and the Detroit Lions on Monday Night Football.
Where do you get this stuff? Maple Bar stealing. So once upon a time, he was a Seattle Seahawk. And again, as we had talking about Cam Chancellor, how things change, man. So Golden Tate leaves and now he's a Maple Bar stealing receiver for the Detroit. What in the world? What's going on with you guys up there?
Come on, Sean. Don't you remember? He did that his rookie year. Man, he stole Maple Bars in his Bellevue residence. There was a donut shop, and he snuck in the back door and stole Maple Bars.
Gosh, man. Gee whiz. So anyway, the Detroit Lions come into town after getting nicked up. And you know, they played a tough Sunday night game last night against the Denver Broncos and came up short. And, man, there are a lot of things that the Detroit Lions need to fix as well. And so this could be another W for the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, as you'd mentioned, the schedule is in their favor, and Detroit is trying to find their identity because, you know, they did, even though they played well enough to stay in the game, they didn't win it. And the Detroit Lions fans in the Motor City were not happy. I mean, a chorus of boos rang out. It seemed like for half of the second half, at least the fourth quarter.
Well, the toughest part is going to be actually being on the show and not being able to pay full attention to the Seattle Seahawks game Monday night. But the show must go on, so I'll definitely get through it as we've done in the past.
Yeah, you'll find a way.
Should be a good contest, and I will be back in the Pacific Northwest next Monday night for that game and our next show, Sean.
So yes, man, and it'll definitely be a good one for me next week. Goodness, I'll be in Santa Clara. Gosh, man, I don't even know what to say. I don't even want to waste my breath with 49er talk because it's it is what it is. You know, those guys are, you know, you get rid of one of your coaches, you know, the probably the best thing that's happened to you, and you have a crazy front office. This is what happens. You know, you get smacked around 47-7, and, you know, it looks like things are spiraling, and boy, should be a lot of fun working for Fox Sports, you know, this weekend. And I'm being facetious on that. So, man, we've had a great show, Sean Wally. Of course, we had guest number one, Aaron Garcia of arena football fame. And, you know, he had some great insight on who he was as a player in the Arena Football, did some awesome things, tremendous things. Talked a little bit about, you know, fatherhood and what it's like to raise a child is, you know, that is also aspiring to go to the next level in athletics and education. And so hats off to Aaron Garcia and his family for that. And of course, guest number two, Cottrell Macklin from Memphis, Tennessee, of working with Sean Wally with the Global Basketball Association down in Las Vegas over the summer, and of ESPN Sports and dealing with teams in Memphis. And so, man, Sean Wally, we have had a great, great show once again. Whew, I don't even know where to start as far as the number of shows. What show are we, Sean Wally?
I didn't keep up on that this week. I want to say 122.
122 and counting, my friend. Of course, whew, you've got some things to finish back east in Long Island, so enjoy yourself on the East Coast, and we will see you back on the West Coast within the week,
and if
man.
If anybody is in the New York City area, coming out to Stony Brook College Saturday and see the Globetrotters take on the World All-Stars.
Yeah, you want to have some fun with family and friends, definitely get out and do that. Great insight, Sean Wally. So, man, that is a wrap for us with show number 122. For Don Newsom, the engineer in Paradise, California, Sean Wally on the East Coast in Long Island. And a special thanks to our associate producer, Alicia Flores, in Sacramento. And, of course, yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. And as we always say, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take a shot, we hope it's nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. Man, another great show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.